Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to SMCC Audio Messages. We are excited to be serving you wherever you are and to be continuing to reach as many people as possible and help them take their next step in full devotion and full delight in Jesus Christ. We'd love to help you personally take your next step. You can check out all the next steps that we have available at smccutah.org/next steps. If you'd like to support the incredible mission of SMCC, one of the ways you can do that is by financially partnering with us. You can find more information about this at smccutah.org/give. If you'd like to dive deeper into what SMCC is all about, you can also subscribe to the Fully Delighted podcast. Now, on to the message for today.
Well, good morning again. If we haven't met, I'm Eric. I get to serve as one of the pastors here on the team, and I'm just so grateful that you chose to be here today, and I've really been looking forward to today's conversation, but I want to start with a story. A few years back, I began to ski. Raise your hand if you ski. Any skiers in the room? Yeah, a few of you. The skiers are probably skiing right now, so... But I'll say this, as I began to ski, it was really rough. The first few times, I was absolutely terrible. I remember one of the moments where I really saw how bad I was is this moment. I was at Brighton, I was getting on the lift, majestic, you know, and as I'm getting on the lift, my ski catches some snow and it pops my ski right off. You know the sign that says, keep your tips up? You should keep your tips up, okay? follow the sign, follow the instruction. And that was kind of embarrassing. A couple chairs back, they picked up my ski. Someone picked it up, threw it to them. And so I'm riding up the lift with one ski. And I'm like, well, how hard could it be to get off the lift with just one ski? I mean, pretty hard for the dude who lost a ski getting on the lift, you know? And so I get to the top and I'm like trying to balance and I just fall over. My poles are everywhere and the chair with the ski, they get up there, they throw the ski at me, it hits me. And it was a total yard sale, just completely embarrassing, you know? But now it's been a few years and things have gotten a lot better. I tell you this because I want you to know this. Whenever we try something, whenever we do something for the first time, there is always room for improvement. And today, I'm speaking on something that I have never spoken on before. In fact, I haven't really heard anybody speak on this. So what could go wrong? I'm not nervous. You're nervous. No, I'm very excited, actually. Let's get on the lift together, shall we? And climb the mountain of today's topic, which is gender and sexuality. Over the last few weeks, really at the beginning of the year, we started a series called Body Theology Together. And this series has been all about exploring the biblical connections between our physical bodies and our spiritual lives. It's a four-week series, and the series is built around four questions that we've processed together throughout the series. This is week three, and in many ways, this is what we have been building to. Because today we are answering this question: what does it mean to be a sexed, embodied human? Not a sexy human or a human that has sex, but a sexed embodied human, to have a gender, to be male and female. And it's that question that we are going to process, and hopefully I can answer for you in about 30 minutes. How hard could that be, you know? Now here's the thing, many people are answering this question in many different ways. Many people are answering this question in many different ways. It's a question we have to address. Now here's the goal for the whole series and the goal for today's message. The goal has always been, from start to finish in this series, peace. The goal has been peace. Peace with God, peace with ourselves, peace with others, and peace with our bodies. That has been the goal of this series. And my hope is that we have been able to paint such a beautiful and compelling picture of what it means to be human, male and female, to have a body, to be made in the image of God, such a compelling picture of that, that you would be able to take that picture and apply it to your life. That has been the goal, that we would make that so compelling because it is so brilliant, it's so beautiful from the Bible, God's design for you and I. My hope is that we can make that so precious, so treasured, and so clear that you would be able to take it and apply it. That I wouldn't have to stand here and say this for you and this for you and this for you and this for you because I don't know. But I do hope that we can take this, what God wants us to know, hold it up, treasure it, and marvel at it, its brilliance and its beauty, and then you could take it and apply it. So we're gonna try and do that again today, but with the specific topic of male and female, sexuality and gender. And I'll explain why I have separated those two words in just a little bit. So, where should we start? Where should we start when it comes to something this delicate and this complex? Why don't we start with Jesus? I think it's always good to start with him. Jesus was so full of grace and truth that people who were nothing like him wanted to be like him. People who were nothing like him just wanted to be around him, wanted to be with him. He was so full of grace and truth that people who were not accepted anywhere were accepted with him. And that acceptance changed them forever. He is still changing people forever. He was and he is described in some very specific ways that matter. He's described as living water for people who are just so thirsty, maybe in this area. He's described as the light of the world for people who have experienced darkness, perhaps in this area. He's described as the bread of life for those who are spiritually hungry. He's described as the good shepherd, the one who can shepherd and lead people who maybe don't know where they're going. He's described as the Prince of Peace, who offers peace to us. He's described as the resurrection and the life, the one who can bring to life those who have experienced death. He's described as the true vine, the one who can nourish us as we bear fruit in our lives. He's described as all of that. And he is for everyone, although he is not for everything, because there are things that get in the way of all that he is. And so I want to begin today with something that Jesus stated, that Jesus taught, that Jesus made incredibly clear in Matthew chapter 19. In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus said something that really gets us into our topic today. He says, haven't you read, he replied, haven't you read that at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Now, contextually, what's happening here is some religious people are trying to trap Jesus. Religious people often are trying to trap people, and they're trying to trap Jesus in a question all about divorce. We don't have time to cover all of that today. We preached on divorce and remarriage a while back. You could find that on our YouTube channel. But what I want to make clear, and what we do have time for today, is to say this. Jesus, by quoting Genesis, is putting his stamp of approval on the first book of the Bible. That book is the book of Genesis. That means origin. It is an origin story to our humanity, okay? So Jesus, by quoting Genesis, puts his stamp of approval on it. Now, even more than that, Jesus, who is the way, the truth, and the life, sees the book of Genesis, by quoting it here, as authoritative, normative, and informative for matters of origin and sexual ethics thousands of years after it was written. Jesus sees Genesis as authoritative. And if we are following Jesus, I think we should see it that way too. And so what he's done by quoting this is taking the timeless truth of Genesis and saying it is cross-cultural. It applies in ancient culture. It applies in the first century. It applies to Jewish culture. It applies to Greco-Roman culture. It applies to Utah culture, okay? He's making this case by quoting Genesis. This is timeless truth for everyone. Now, of course, he's quoting Genesis chapter 1. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 1 and take a peek at it in its original context. We have to pay attention to what Jesus is saying. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Now, if you weren't here in week one, we processed this, but I just want to say this. The human experience, it is complex, and it can be very confusing at times. But what Jesus has said here, it is as clear, or excuse me, what Moses has said here that Jesus quotes, it's as clear, clear as crystal. And this is the first mile marker in our message today. God created male and female sexed bodies as an essential part of being human. That's what we see. Male and female sexed bodies as an essential part of being human. Now, depending on what you might believe about gender and sex, and once again, I'll talk about why I've separated that in just a little bit. You might hear this as outdated, as regressive, as closed-minded, as traditional, as if we've sailed past this by now in our culture. But here's what I want you to know. When Moses first said this, when Jesus quoted this, it was revolutionary. Because up until this point, in a masculine-led patriarchal society, women did not see themselves like this. Men did not see women like this. It was revolutionary, okay? This empowered women like never before in a male-dominated society. Now, you should know this. There were other origin stories around during this time, origin stories of why people were here and why the world is the way that it is, why the world is here in the first place. And those origin stories existed and kind of communicated the origin of all things as this. It's as if the deities, a plethora of gods who are always at war and always battling, were fighting it out in a— this is an actual origin story, that the drops of blood that fell from that battle, well, that created humanity. And the world is really the byproduct of those cosmic battles. And so we're here as an accident, as a byproduct of a cosmic war. And so guess what? Life's gonna kind of be like that now too. That is the opposite. A cosmic battle is the opposite of an intentional design. And so this origin story, it would have been seen as brilliant. It would have been seen as beautiful. It was very much revolutionary. And it's the structure of the creation narrative here that can structure for us, as it did for Jesus, our ethics today. Ethics, our sense of morality, our sense of right and wrong. Now, the importance of sex differences becomes very clear in the next verse. So let's go there now. In verse 28 of chapter 1, we see this. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So, as we covered in week 1, both Adam and Eve and the rest of humanity have a macro role in this life. And that macro role is to image God by representing him, reflecting him, being responsible to him, and ruling the way he would want us to rule, stewarding this world the way he would want us to steward it, managing our resources and this resource the way he would want us to manage it. But here in verse 28, we see another important role. It's the reproductive role in humanity. The reproductive role is seen here. Be fruitful. Adam and Eve each had a different reproductive role to participate and contribute to human flourishing. This means that male and female, certainly the understanding of male and female in verse 27 is connected to biology, as we see a reproductive role in verse 28. They fit together. Genesis did not intend to separate biology from gender. It was male and female, that describes gender, with a biology that allows them to reproduce. That's verse 28. Genesis keeps them together. And Jesus, by seeing Genesis as authoritative, tells us that we should do the same thing. So your sex was not assigned at birth. It was designed by God, as Psalm 139 says, in your mother's womb. Now, more to come on all of that, but let's press on. In the next chapter, we see another statement that takes us deeper. In the next chapter, chapter 2, you need to know, chapter 2 is not a chronological outflow of chapter 1. Genesis 2 is a zooming of the lens. It's a zooming in, it's a focusing of the lens to help us understand even more what is happening here. So Genesis 2 now, verse 21 and 22. So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep, and while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and then closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her, gifted her to the man. Now, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, men are from Mars, women are from?
Venus.
Venus, yeah. If you grew up on the playground I grew up on, we often said this, women go to Jupiter to get more stupider. Joke's on the dudes, because who would say stupider in an actual joke about someone else being stupid, you know? I think we know who's stupider. I wanna just make this point, that that's just not true. That in the most important aspects of life, male and female, as image bearers of God, have far more in common in the most important aspects of life than differences. It's really important that we make sense of this, and let me explain it like this. I think we can get there through our understanding of the word rib. Rib. This word in Hebrew for rib shows up multiple times in the Old Testament. It's never translated again as rib. It's most often translated as a sacred part of a sacred whole. The whole thing is sacred. And the rib is really another way of saying a sacred part of the sacred whole, which really helps us understand what is happening here. And what is happening here is this. This is one timeless truth we can take away from all of this. God created both male and female as equal and different, as equal and different. God has a high view of the body. Biblical Christianity has a high view of the body. It's kind of why we're doing this series, not a reductionistic view of it. So mile marker number two is God created both male and female as equal and different. Radically equal, meaningfully different, even at the molecular level. Listen, if the world wants inclusivity and if the world wants diversity, look no further than this. This is radical inclusion, radical equality, the image of God, sacred. It is radical diversity in that it is male and female. See, it takes both genders to adequately and properly image God. That is not because God is both genders. It is because God is one being in three persons. There is equality and differentiation in the Trinity. Now, we don't have time to unpack the Trinity fully, but I just want to give us a few ideas here, and we'll come back around to this in just a few minutes. There is sameness in our God. Sameness as each person is fully God. Each person of the Trinity, fully God, just as male and female are fully human. But there is otherness or differentiation in the Trinity, as the Father is not the Son and the Son is not the Spirit, just as male is not female. And so if we are going to image God the way he designed, the genders are absolutely a crucial part of that. Sameness and otherness connected together in community to paint this picture. Now, as we said in week one, this origin story, which if you remember, Jesus sees as authoritative, does not separate a real you inside of you from the you outside of you. We made a big case for that in week one. We've said it even again today that Genesis is not dividing gender and biology. Now, this is a very important point, and let me say this. Culture, though, has separated sex and gender. Culture has separated sex and gender and used many different words to describe how they all fit together, okay? Now, we've been exegeting the text a little bit here. Exegete is a fancy, you know, word for pull out the meaning of something. So we've been doing that with Genesis and Matthew 19. But let's exegete culture together for just a little bit and pull out some things that we're seeing in culture. What I'm about to say next is not something that I'm necessarily teaching. I just want you to know what the conversation sounds like so you can participate. Because for many of us, we've been in this conversation for a while. We're very familiar with the words and the definitions. And in fact, you're wondering if I know all the words and definitions, and you're listening very carefully to see if I'm gonna uphold some standard that I don't even know I'm supposed to uphold. That's uncomfortable. Moving on. Some of you are like, what is happening in this world? I don't even know where to go with all of this. I don't even know how to understand it. Well, let me bring you up to speed in all of this so that you're able to participate in a meaningful conversation just so you can kind of understand what's happening here. Now, before I get to some definitions, some common phrases, some common concepts, I do want to say this. I understand why there's a desire to separate biology and gender. I mean, really, when it comes to biology or sexuality, there's a part of that that is oh so important to the human experience. But in another way, the way we experience that can be very, very different depending on how we are raised and what our body even looks like and maybe the stereotypes or the cultural expectations or a bunch of other things. So I see why people are like, yeah, biology is one thing, but let me tell you about my experience, bro. And I can see why there's a separation. Now let's talk about some of the words that try to connect all of these things and describe the concepts inside of this. Here we go. For many, sex refers to a person's biological maleness or femaleness, the result of a chromosomal equation. That's how I've been using the word and will continue to use the word today. Gender refers to the psychological, social, and cultural aspects of being male and female. Sex and gender. This is how people are talking about these things in different ways, okay? Gender identity refers to an internal sense of self as male or female. Gender role refers to what culture expects of a male and female. We'll come back to what cultures expect. Transgender is a term that refers to people who express or identify with a gender identity that doesn't match their biological sex. Gender dysphoria, which is a rather new term. There was another term for that used in the 60s, 70s, and 80s even. We don't have time to explore that today, but gender dysphoria is a term for the stress people feel when the internal sense of self doesn't match their external expectations, okay? Non-binary refers to the idea that the two main options don't adequately describe the person, neither male nor female. Binary means just two options. Non-binary means that those two options don't adequately describe the person at hand, okay? That is a crash course in the use of language today around this topic. Now, you should know there is a growing sense for many people, primarily young people, that there is an incongruence between their sex and gender identity. Remember, gender identity refers to their internal sense of self as either male or female. So there's this growing incongruence for many young people. There's others as well, but it's rapidly growing in young people that sees an incongruence between identity on the inside and biology on the outside. Now, with all of these concepts, if your head's kind of spinning, you're like, how am I supposed to keep up with some of this? That's kind of the point. That's what makes this so difficult. With all of these concepts mixed together and blended up, add in cultural stereotypes, add in the deep desire to belong and be accepted, add in the internet and social media and Instagram and TikTok, it is no wonder this is a mess, okay? This is a mess, and this is why we're talking about it. Now, to use the word that's guided our whole series, there's just no peace, okay? Now, Preston Sprinkle is an author. I'll refer you to his book in just a little bit. Summarizes some of this and provides an insight, and this insight will bridge us into the next portion of our message. He says, a person is biologically either male or female based on four things: the presence of a Y chromosome, internal reproductive organs, external sexual anatomy, and endocrine systems that produce secondary sex characteristics. Okay, our interpretations of sex and sexed bodies might be socially constructed, but sex itself is not socially constructed, okay? It's those four things that he describes. So we've covered some biblical ground. The biblically constituted piece of this, but let's look some more at the culturally constructed piece by talking about stereotypical categories of masculinity and femininity, okay? It's a hard word to say, femininity. Let's talk about that in terms of stereotypes, cultural constructs, socially constructed ideas about gender. This is a very important piece of this conversation. And I want to start with this. Stereotypes are descriptions of what is, not prescriptions of what must be. So every culture has stereotypes on what's manly and what's not. Every culture has some stereotypes around what a lady is like and what's feminine, okay, and what's not. And the stereotypes that we have here and now, in Utah, guess what? On the other side of the world, they're like the opposite. I saw a guy the other day on Instagram, big old belly. It said, this is the picture of masculinity. And I was like, wow, maybe I should check that place out. You know, it was like that. But here it's like push-ups and CrossFit and camo and buff, like beards, you know, it's like all, and it's like, interesting. Every culture has some stereotypes, some understandings of what it means to be masculine, what it means to be feminine. And here's what you need to know. That is always changing. That's constantly changing. In the early 1900s, pink was a very manly color, okay? I don't care if you're wearing pink today. You can wear all the pink you want. It's just not seen as a manly color anymore. I don't know. Maybe that'll change. I don't really care. In Ireland, men wear kilts. Aren't you glad I'm not wearing one of those today? Yeah, that would be really awkward. It's just, it's nothing wrong with it. It's just our cultural stereotypes are just a little bit different. Now, it is our stereotypes that fuel so many of our thoughts about gender. Whether we match those stereotypes, gender conforming, stereotype conforming, or if we don't match those stereotypes, stereotype non-conforming. So let's just break this down real practical. Moms and dads, you have one daughter. Your daughter doesn't like to play with dolls, doesn't like to wear makeup, wears baggy clothes, listens to Billie Eilish, you know? and absolutely crushes dudes in the wrestling room, you know? Just absolute monster as a wrestler. Should we call into question her gender or her biology? I say no. Let's call into question the cultural stereotypes that have made us sensitive to the issue in the first place. Okay? Let's go with another one. You have a son. Son loves theater. I'm just playing out the stereotypes, folks. Loves theater. I don't know why that's funny, but. Sings with a high voice, all right? Does ballet, probably more fit than anybody in the room. Have you seen male ballet dancers? They're beasts, right? Maybe runs with their wrists out, okay? Do we call into question their gender, their biology? Absolutely not. Why would we ever do that? It's just so important that we get this right. Listen, so important that we get this right. Stereotypical, non-conforming people are not a mistake. They're a gift, okay? They're a gift. And why would we let our cultural stereotypes, which are constantly changing, lead us to a place where we're gonna make a permanent decision about something that is oh so temporary and will probably change in the next round of social media influence? That doesn't seem wise. That seems horrific. That seems very damaging. What I'm saying is, in scenarios like this, let's call into question our cultural stereotypes, our gender stereotypes, before we call into question what it means to be male or female, call into question their biology. Cultural projections of sexuality can constantly cloud our understanding of what it means to be made in the image of God, what it means to be male and female, and we must guard against this on both extremes. On both extremes. Clothing and hairstyle and mannerisms, they're culturally bound. They're always changing. Once again, any permanent change around a temporary idea, it will produce ongoing distress. Here is the good news. The biblical pictures of masculinity and femininity defy our cultural stereotypes. Listen, if the body doesn't define man and woman, we are left with culture to define man and woman. And if culture is always changing, in what sense would we ever want to allow a changing culture to define for us something that knowable empirical facts of biology can help us know? That seems far more wise. The Bible isn't concerned with us being more like the Western stereotypical man. And the Bible isn't concerned with the ladies in the room looking more like whatever Utah stereotype lady looks like. The Bible isn't concerned with you being more feminine or more masculine. It's concerned with you being more godly first. Godly first. And so in Galatians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul sums up what are just beautiful fruits of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such thing there is no law. This isn't just for the women. This isn't just for the men. This is for all of us, that we would be more like Jesus. Now, real quick, I am not saying that there are not specific aspects or roles that we have as men. I'm not saying we don't have those. Things like being a father, being a brother, being a husband. Man, there are some specific roles. It's a little bit smaller than we might think, and it always flows into the fruits of the Spirit. And it is that way with the roles of women as well. There are some specific roles that biology obviously can help us see, that can help us understand what those roles are. But I just want to say the Bible isn't concerned with the Western approach of manliness and femininity. It's mostly concerned that we would be more like Jesus, as seen in Galatians 5, the fruits of the Spirit. Yet, the distinction remains. Why? Why are we sexed? So let's come around and answer that question. But first, a quick check-in. How are we doing? Everybody with me still? Doing okay? All right. I heard some claps. Good. Don't clap. You're clapping for yourself that you've made it this far, all right? Glad you've made it this far. Now, what does it mean to be sexed? I need you to focus for this next part. When people usually talk about this question, they always go to procreation. And as we've already said, there's an aspect of that. That's part of it. That helps us connect biology and gender, absolutely. But there is so much more. And I wanna share with you two quotes that were a major breakthrough for me as I studied all of this. Here we go. The mystery of our sexuality is the mystery of our need to reach out to embrace others, both physically and spiritually. Sexuality thus expresses God's intention that we find our authentic humanness in relationships. In relationships. Remember, Adam, after he was created, was alone. It was not good that he was alone. God gifted him Eve. He needed another. This was before sin entered the picture. We weren't made to satisfy ourselves. And biology alone helps us understand that, okay? Theology helps us understand that. And once again, we are looking at creation theology to set up our gender theology today, okay? But let's look at one more. This is how it connects to the image of God. In God we see, think Trinity here, the three persons who are both other and same. I've already talked about this. Fully God and differentiated, Father, Son, and Spirit. One being, three persons, okay, who are both other and same, eternally bonded, an intimate community found in the Trinity. In this way, the divine being is the eternal ground of the drive toward bonding that finds its most basic human expression in the male and female of human sexuality and its ultimate human realization. This is very, very important for single people, those who can't have kids, those who haven't had kids, won't have, I mean, what, it's not about procreation at the heart of all of this. Even in the eschatological community, which means a picture of God's people in the end worshiping King Jesus, he says this, its ultimate human realization, this deep community, is found in the eschatological community of God's people. So, enjoying community with the other, who is also the same, other in terms of gender, same in terms of fully human, is a powerful and beautiful way of imaging God, who is also one and other. In order to image God, who is one and three, we must relate to others who are one, same, and very different as well. Differentiated sexes is God's beautiful way of preparing us to be satisfied by another, to ultimately find our satisfaction in him. It's his way of preparing us for community and gifting people to us for that type of community. This is a picture of us imaging a Trinitarian God. And if this is the case, let's just quickly apply this to marriage and relationship. If this is the case, same and other, you can see why marriage is created as one man and one woman forever. Because it beautifully paints the picture of our beautiful Trinitarian God. It's the perfect picture of sameness and otherness. So any sexual activity or sexuality apart from that distorts the picture. Sex with someone you're not married to distorts the picture, and that there's a break in the relationship. There's not a lifelong commitment, or we could even use the word covenant. Sex with someone you're not married to, sex with the same sex with yourself, sex on a screen, all of it gets in the way of this incredible picture of unity between the same and the other. And it's that picture of same and other that requires biology to adequately image our God. Aligning with that picture is best. So as we begin to round home together, I wanna get as clear as I've been up until now. Make it very clear. We are not completely defined by our biological sex, but we can't define ourselves without including our biological sex. To be the people that God made us to be, we must allow biology to inform our identity. And as I said before, but I want to say it again, it is far wiser to find guidance from unchanging, empirically knowable facts of biology about our gender than to find the guidance from internal feelings, changing desires, changing cultures, and unbiblical, ungodly stereotypes. That is far wiser, to go with biology first. I'm convinced that fighting against this will lead to far less peace, not more. Once again, no biblical evidence for separating biology from gender identity. And so through all the noise, he created us, male and female. So pursuing a gender identity separate from your biological sex will bring you further from, not closer to, God's ideal for your life. Now, this is being rejected at an alarming rate, right? You know this. This is being rejected, and I think I'm beginning to understand why, but I don't fully understand that struggle. But the reason for this is that there's this desperate desire for peace. There's this internal lack of peace. What I see on the outside doesn't match what I feel on the inside, and I want peace. And then someone shows up in someone's life and says, you know the way to peace? Go ahead and change this. Go ahead and start using these words. Go ahead and see a doctor about this, and that will be the quickest way to peace. I don't think it is. I think it's a way to more turmoil and more stress. What I want to say to anybody in the midst of an identity crisis, and I've been through my own types of identity crisis, what I want to say to anybody in identity crisis is this: the one who most accepts you will most identify you, or the ones who most accept you will most identify you. And this explains the social contagion behind all of this. When multiple people come out all at once, you have to look at the social contagion behind that group. And on the one hand, some might say, Eric, are you saying I'm trapped in my body? We could easily say on the other hand, do you want to be trapped in your culture that's constantly changing and doesn't love you like the one who created you with your biology? I think these are important ways to look at all of this. Stereotypes don't define you. Desires don't define you. Culture doesn't define you. And your peers, let's not even let them define us or define you. Let me say this. Let his acceptance of you shape you. If he's the one who most accepts you, he will be the one who most identifies you. And he is the one who most accepts us. So I want to say this to anybody looking for liberation to find their authentic self. I want to say it as clearly as possible. It won't be found in any transgender script or any other script. It will be found in the one who accepts you just as you are, and that is Jesus Christ. That's what I want you to know. Now, at this point, you might be saying, Eric, what about and what about and what about? Dude, what do we do with the pronouns? What do we do with the bathrooms? What do we do with intersex? I mean, all of this is so important. I'm a minute over time. So these require their own robust conversations, okay? They really do. And I'd be happy to sit down and have those conversations with you. We don't have time for it today, and I certainly don't want to gloss over it or undermine it. But I want to give you four resources that might really provide some help and some guidance, at least help you into the conversation. So here's four of them. First service said I rattled them off so fast they couldn't write them down. So I'm going to go slow. Here we go. Embodied by Preston Sprinkle. You could pick up that one. You could read that one. Embodied by Preston Sprinkle. Love Thy Body by best-selling author Nancy Piercy. Love Thy Body. The Genesis of Gender by Abigail Favall Lee. I don't know how to say it. Once again, I'm not saying I agree with everything in these books, but I found them helpful in the conversation. And this one, Theological Anthropology by Mark Cortez. Side note, this was Carissa's youth pastor growing up. He's now the dean at Wheaton, so Carissa's my wife. So check out those. I think you'll find them helpful. I want to say something to the community, and I want to say something to individuals. Here we go. SMCC, for 25 years, we have had a history of being a safe place. A place where people can belong regardless of what they believe. That is not changing. And the reason this has been a descriptor of who we are is because we've embraced the grace and truth of Jesus. This place will continue to be, if we all embrace this, the grace and truth of Jesus, the safest place for people confused, struggling, doubting, non-conforming, in whatever way that might be. Guys, will the beloved of Jesus be loved by us? For 25 years, we've answered that with yes, and we will continue to. Now, let me say something to individuals. Okay, here's the bridge. To summarize this, we embrace sexed bodies as God's sacred creation. We reject unbiblical stereotypes, and there are so many around masculinity and femininity. We pursue truth, and we lavish grace on everyone. We lavish grace on everyone. How? Would you honor the gender that you are not? At this point, I'm using the word gender biblically as I see it, connected to biology. Would you honor the gender that you are not? And when you do, you respect God's design of equality and difference, God's approach to inclusion and diversity. I just want to say this. I'm so grateful for the women in my life. So grateful for my mom and my sister. I'm grateful for my wife. I'm grateful for my sisters in Christ at SMCC, my colleagues. They're amazing. I'm grateful for my friends at SMCC. I'm grateful for the men in my life. who have shown me how to be a father and a husband and a brother and have shown me empathy and shown me how to grieve and shown me how to weep. We need each other. And we need to honor the gender that we are not. One last thing, I'll be done. If I've said anything today that has made you think that place called SMCC that was so safe just doesn't seem safe for me anymore, that is the last thing I could have ever wanted today. If I've said something that made you go, that can't be the place for me, I'm not coming back, would you please do me a favor and connect with me first? I would love to listen. I'd love to talk more. I love you from the bottom of my heart. With all the limitations of my brain, my IQ, all the limitations of my words and my vocabulary, here is my last bit of encouragement. I want to leave you with this. Let's be more like Jesus, our embodied God. Let's pray. God, thank you for an opportunity to have this discussion. Thank you for an opportunity to be together in community, because even this reflects the community that you had in mind when you created it all. God, we all have confusion, doubts, and struggles. We've chosen to talk about a specific one today because it's important. And I just pray that we would find deep peace in honoring you when it comes to gender, biology, that we would find deep peace in taking our next step to be more like you, Jesus. Thank you that you accept us, that you welcome us just as we are. But you don't leave us that way. But it's not that easy, so we need each other in this mess. So here we are before you with one more song together. It's in your name, Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Thank you again for listening to today's message. If you enjoyed this hopeful and helpful content, we'd love for you to subscribe and share an episode with a friend. Also, if you can please do us a huge favor and leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening on, we'd really appreciate it. We'll see you again next week.